Hello, everyone. Welcome to Talking Logistics, where we have conversations with thought leaders and newsmakers in the supply chain logistics industry. It's my great pleasure to welcome today's program, Brian Corelli, who is VP Product Management Sustainability at Infor. And today we're going to talk about the new visibility, unlocking multi-tier transparency and traceability. So one of the things that many companies learned often the hard way during the COVID pandemic is that they really didn't have good visibility across their end-to-end supply chain. At least not beyond their tier one suppliers and partners. And so if you fast forward to today, having multi-tier transparency and traceability is more important than ever. So what trends are driving this level of importance and this need now in the market? Where are most companies today on that journey? What are some of the challenges that companies face in going beyond their tier one suppliers and partners? And how can technology help? Well, those are some of the questions we're going to explore in today's episode. And it's great to have Brian on the program to share his insights and advice on this topic. So, Brian, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me, Adrian. This is exciting. It's probably top of mind for a lot of folks in supply chain. And it's one of the most important topics that we've got. We need to make supply chains more transparent and sustainable.
Absolutely. And as I was thinking about this episode, I've been an industry analyst now for over 25 years, and certainly throughout that whole time, visibility has always been a top of mind topic. It's been a topic that, tons of white papers and webcasts like these have been focused on, topics of conversation at conferences. And certainly, over the past decade, sustainability is also something that's been, talked about more, and really those two things are kind of getting, more woven, together. And I think, like I said in my introductory remarks, I think COVID was one of these things that kind of was a turning point put the lens on the fact for many companies that they really lacked visibility, or they maybe had a very limited definition of what visibility was. So maybe as a way to get started, why is having multi-tier visibility, regardless of the industry you're in, because this really goes across all different industries, why is that more important than ever today? I mean, what factors or trends are driving this need?
Yeah, so you kind of hit on it, Adrian. This really became top of mind during the pandemic because, every contract manufacturer, everyone who's manufacturing just about anything, you always know your first-tier suppliers and who you're sourced directly from. But what COVID pointed out is when you have a little bump in that supply chain and all of a sudden your tier two isn't performing the way you want to or can't make the materials you need or the components that you need, then that's a problem with your entire supply chain. So that was a really big driving factor. It kind of opened everybody's eyes. We it's good to manage your tier ones and you're going to need to, but you really need to go beyond that if you want to have true visibility and you really want to see into it. And then it's a ton of government regulation in general. So everything from in the US, we have the UFLPA, which basically is a law that went into effect that says if you can't prove that you didn't source goods from the Uyghur Autonomous Region in China, then Customs Border Patrol can stop and detain your shipment. And then you have to basically 30 days to prove that you didn't source the goods from there to get them out of detention, or you have to send them to another country. In Europe, in the EU, they're rolling out the digital product passport that has a lot of concern for our customers. How can you comply? It's going to require a more severe and more deeper level of traceability than we can see today. And just in general too, just kind of the trade winds have shifted a little bit globally as well. So, we had a really nice open era of really open free trade policy over the past, decade plus. And that enabled us to get a little bit more lax when it comes to understanding where you source materials from as well. That's starting to tighten up a little bit. Geopolitical tensions are rising. For example, if you want to import aluminum, copper, nickel today into the United States, you have to prove that they were not sourced from Russia. They're not Russian origin. So these are ways that, all of a sudden, little tiny shifts or large shifts in global trade winds can make outsized impacts on your supply chain. And that's why you need to trace a little bit better and a little bit more thoroughly than you have before.
Yeah. And I think those are all great points. And I think, the way I've seen it is that, visibility, I think historically was viewed as or defined as, hey, we need to know the status of our orders. We need to know the status of our shipments, our inventory, goods in transit. And that's all still important. But I think what we've been seeing, just to underscore what you brought up there, is that this definition of visibility is expanding, right? So now it's talking about visibility to potential forced labor or slavery in your supply chains, right? It's visibility now to any kind of restricted trade regulations that might be in place and whether you're complying with those. You know, sustainability, right? That's another thing, right? So there's laws and regulations, you know, some of them are enforced, some of them are going through the legal process right now and so forth. But again, visibility into carbon emissions and carbon footprint and all that is also becoming, you know, part of that. So to me, it's like kind of this broader definition of what visibility is, right?
You fit right on it. I like to say that, you know, really when we talk about visibility, it was kind of one dimensional. You were looking at where are my shipments? Where's my stuff as it comes from your, you know, kind of final manufacturer, your tier one. But at the end of the day, we're trying to go two dimensional with this. You know, you need to be able to see above and beyond that. And if you can't reach in and understand where your products were sourced from all the way to origin, then you can't make a sustainable claim on them. How do you know where that aluminum we were just talking about came from? If you don't know, how can you, assure that the cotton in your shirt was made where you think it was, that it's organic, if there's an organic claim on it? And this is coming under further scrutiny too. You know, there was a lot of kind of backlash at greenwashing recently. And part of what, you know, the EU's digital product passport says, if you want to make a claim on your product, you're going to have to be able to show where it was sourced from all the way to origin. Well, you can't do that if you can't trace your product. So things are kind of aligning nicely in a good way. I think the whole industry is kind of rallying around this, but eyes are open and suppliers fortunately seem to be opening up a little bit as well and kind of giving us a little bit more lens into where their processes are and helping us along the journey here.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, that there's still challenges here. I mean, I think when just last week or maybe it was earlier this month, I saw a news item that there was a study done that found that about 19% of the cotton used being used in import is coming from kind of the Uyghur region in China. So even though there's a regulation in place, you know, there's still a relatively high percentage that's you know, falling through the cracks, partly because I think a lot of companies still lack that visibility all the way to the point of origin, which brings me really to my next question, which is, you know, you work with a lot of companies, a lot of different industries. I mean, in general, I mean, how would you characterize where most companies are today on this journey? I mean, are they near the top or near the bottom of the maturity curve, in this area?
Yeah, I mean, it really depends, not just from company to company, but even more so from industry to industry. So, you know, there are more mature supply chains, like pharma went through its kind of traceability transformation, you know, 10 plus years ago, closer to 20 years ago at this point. Same thing for food. They've done, you know, some good work with food so that you've got better ability to recall products when you know that there is an E. coli infection, for example. But other industries have a tougher time. You know, I saw in the news just today, automotive manufacturers are getting, kind of found out that some of their supply came from that same Uyghur autonomous region, and now they have to do recalls on products. Fashion, is notoriously difficult. You mentioned cotton specifically. You know, cotton is one of the most widely grown crops in the world. It is the thing that drives the fashion supply chain more than any other material. And it's still very difficult to figure out exactly where it's sourced from. A lot of this cotton ends up in large aggregates. It's sold often at auction. And when you've got a whole bunch of different inputs into your cotton, it's hard to say where it came from. So it's going to require, so when you're looking at certain industries, you know, fashion has a long way to go. Farm is a little bit further along. But even within those industries, some customers really take this, you know, very, very seriously. They have for decades. You know, you can think of some of those like name brands, especially in fashion, where they've been known to use, you know, organic materials for quite a long time, and their traceability processes are in place, and they can leverage those a lot easier now. But then there are others who just, this was not on their radar. So a lot of this is kind of working directly with your suppliers, having them get a little bit of muscle memory so they're used to doing the tracing, so that it doesn't feel like it's such a burden all at once to them. So if you're not practicing now, or the regulations that are coming, you're going to be really caught kind of flat-footed once they roll out. So,
yeah. Now, do you see, maybe this is tied into my next question here. So let me get your thoughts on this next question. Maybe I'll bring up this other question that just popped to mind. But I mean, what are some of the challenges that, you know, companies face? So yeah, so you just mentioned it, there's this kind of a diversity by industry, that even within industries, there's a diversity there, depending on, you know, when you got started on this and kind of what capabilities you have in place and so forth. But in generally speaking, I mean, what are some of the challenges companies facing going beyond their tier one suppliers and partners?
That's really, you get to the heart of it there. It's you start to lose incentives once you get beyond tier one. You give your tier one lots of incentives. You can give them more business if they're doing a better job tracing. You can give them, you know, better terms potentially on payments, things like that. But once you're getting down to tier two, it's harder to find incentives and to have them kind of play along. So a couple things that we've seen is we do notice that if you get up into tier two and tier three, some of these suppliers are using this as a competitive advantage. Hey, we will help and we are able to trace and we want to show you that we're able to. So go with us instead of another, you know, supplier that might not be able to do as good of a job. Another thing we're looking at is really, you know, it's a lot of work to do this. And if you're on a factory floor and you're adding another process to your already laundry list of processes that you need to do for compliance, this adds another one. So can we do smart things like instead of having users have to input all this data, can we read it from reports and have, you know, smart machines that can understand exactly what that, you know, kind of do some of the work that the humans would have done to make it a little bit easier on the suppliers. And then as we start to gather this data, you know, one of the things that we see is potential for better financing terms for end-tier suppliers. Today, a lot of that tends to be locked up. A lot of the financing terms or the banks that are financing tend to be local. Can we open that up to more of a global variety, get better financing terms, more access to cash, proof that you are able to trace, proof that you have a good record with your suppliers and your customers, and then potentially use that as another incentive? Where it's an industry with a lot of sticks and few carrots, so we're out there trying to find the carrots.
I love that line. And yeah, I hadn't even thought about that. But yes, I mean, there's always the question, you know, as you get deeper into the tiers, you know, their question is, well, what's in it for me, right? You know, why should I invest the people, the time, the resources, the technology, you know, maybe invest in new technology to help support you in these efforts? You know, what's in it for me? And I think things like, you know, financing terms or financial incentives there, you know, the carrots, as you say, coming up with those, I think are important. The other thing, so this is the question that popped up when you were talking earlier, and I think part of the challenge is also, and I wonder if you've seen this in other industries. I think I've seen examples of this where, you know, probably it makes sense that instead of every company trying to do this on their own, that you've got kind of at the industry level, there is some kind of standardization or some kind of body that helps to do this. Because I mean, you know, many folks in the same industry work with the same suppliers and the same contract manufacturers and so forth. So what are you seeing there? I mean, is there any initiatives or groups out there in different industries where it's like, hey, instead of each of us trying to reinvent the wheel, why don't we invest at the industry level to do this together and kind of share the risk and rewards, if you will, of this?
Totally. So standardization is very difficult. You know, I have a background in computer science and they're always trying to standardize between different formats and, you know, EDI, if everyone's ever lived in that world, you know what that's like. It's difficult to get standards down. But one thing that we see is GS1 is a great reference example. So we use GS1 standards here. We try to adhere to them wherever possible. A lot of times they might be a little pie in the sky, but it gives you kind of a playbook. And if everyone kind of tries to stay with that similar kind of standard, it helps get a little bit of understanding throughout the industry, and then you can leverage that later on. Other things like tools like Open Supply Hub, you know, it's nice to have one reference point that is nonprofit that, you know, everyone can kind of reference and go back and look at. But at the end of the day, what it really comes down to is every industry kind of needs to find their own standardization process. It's not just one size fits all. The way you did it in pharma is not going to be the same way that you do in automotive, for example. So a lot of this as well, one of the nice things is that more than other, you know, kind of the other aspects of our business and supply chain, other, you know, our customers are more willing to rally around and work together on this problem. This is kind of the nice thing about working in an area that's tied to sustainability. There's no winners and losers. We're all winners when you make it better. And we have seen more willingness to work together, to talk to each other, to understand a little bit about where they are. And they share a lot of the same suppliers. So if you can have one standard process that supplier can adhere to, it really makes a big difference. At the end of the day, with traceability, it is really about the suppliers. Make it as easy on them as you can. You need them to comply. Give them any incentive that you can find. And remember, they're the ones who need to do like a lot of the on the ground work. How can we give them tools, standards that make it easier to adhere to?
Yeah, and you know, and I think that, you know, standards obviously play a big role here. I think, you know, this is a topic I've written and talked about a lot, is also there's a level of trust that ultimately that needs to come into play here, right? And I think in general, there's been a lack of trust across the supply chain for a long time. The other aspect I think is that, you know, and which ties into the trust piece, right? It was, you know, what I found is a lot of companies say, okay, you know, we have our direct relationship with our tier one suppliers and our tier one, you know, partners, and we trust our tier one suppliers to pick the right sub suppliers, and we put the responsibility on them to make sure that the sub suppliers are complying and doing the right things. And I'm wondering if you know, there's the whole trust but verify, that famous line there, where maybe companies need to take more of a direct role or have better processes in place where they're actually interacting more directly with some of these sub-suppliers rather than just, you know, because ultimately the buck stops with you, the tier one, I mean, with you, the customer, with you, the brand owner, right? In the case of a recall, in the case of a quality issue, in the case of a greenwashing, you know, claim, whatever the case might be, the buck ultimately stops with you. So you can't outsource totally the full responsibility, right? So I'm wondering what you're seeing there in terms of, are you seeing companies getting more involved to say, hey, you know, we our tier one suppliers and partners are going to take the bulk of responsibility, but we also need to be involved and have some oversight of those sub-suppliers as well.
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of it. It is difficult to do, and it can be a little tenuous between yourselves and your finished goods suppliers. There's often not a lot of incentive for them to name their tier twos. But what we've seen, especially larger companies tend to have a little bit more leverage to do so, but they're working directly with their tier twos and sometimes even their tier three suppliers who, a lot of that came through after COVID. We want to be able to assure our supply. So we can't do that directly with the tier one because they might not, you know, we don't know where they're sourcing from for tier two. So can we do larger buys of components and materials at tier two and then use that with tier one? We're starting to see more and more of that for sure. It can be a little bit tricky. We do have, you know, a little bit of a playbook that we can help out with our customers and say, this is how we've seen others do it. This is how we know that it works well if you know, you're kind of sourcing directly to tier two. This is how you assure your material supply even after you've gone through and guaranteed it, and you can actually track it from tier two down to that kind of customer's hands. But I think you're going to start to see more and more of this. The industry is kind of opening up. You know, if you think back to the 80s, it was very closed loop. It was, you know, we contract manufacture potentially from someone over in Asia. We don't know what they do in the factory. And that didn't hold muster. That is not good enough. The whole world came back and said, yes, you do need to. And now our customers pretty much across the board audit their factories in person to make sure that the suppliers, their facilities are up to code. We're going to need to spread that all the way up the tiers of the supply chain. This is how you get rid of things like forced labor and how you can actually assure that the goods in that package are made with the components that you think they are.
Right, right. And, you know, I think the other challenge, obviously, is, you know, particularly in certain supply chains, you know, the reality is you can have thousands of suppliers when you look across all the different, you know, subcomponents. So it becomes, you know, it becomes kind of a scalability problem, right? You can't have people go visiting a thousand suppliers and so forth. And I think this is where kind of leads out to my next question. I mean, obviously, technology is going to play an important role here. So again, how is technology helping companies address these challenges? And obviously, the hot topic today is AI. You know, is this an area where AI can help?
Unavoidable to not hear AI in any technical discussion these days, because it is, you know, it is potentially hugely transformative. So we try to do this a lot here at Nexus, which is how can we figure out how to make it easier for compliance and how to make it easier specifically on the suppliers? And I think AI can play a role in that. When you're thinking of traceability, it is really kind of a big game of pattern matching. Where did I see the same supply go through last time? What were these components used for when they made up this other material? When I create this product, where do I source from? So if we can start using AI to do pattern matching in that way, we can either suggest to the user who's helping us do the trace to say, we've seen this pattern before. Is this where you sourced it from? Or, you know, there's lots of companies out there that are, I call it automagically mapping the supply chain. So they're using publicly available data. They're often using AI and you know, machine learning to go through and read through publicly available records to find some of those, you know, thousands and tens of thousands of suppliers that you may not be aware of in your supply chain. How can you take that large signal and take the noise out of it to figure out exactly who you're working with, and then to try to build direct relationships with those suppliers as well? So technology helps. One thing that we do see a lot of is a lot of spreadsheets and a lot of emails in this process, and that wears down the suppliers one way or another. So can we make just, you know, easily more automated processes? Can we do smart things like read through pattern matching and automatically make detections across traceability and across supply chains? And can we really kind of lessen the burden for people on the factory floor?
Yeah, you brought up something. So I've been a big proponent, you know, for a long time of networks and, you know, large networks where, you know, in a single environment, you've got thousands of trading partners connected, right? Suppliers and logistics service providers and contract manufacturers and so on and so forth. And I think one of the values of that is you've got this wealth of data and information flowing through it. So one of the things that I wrote about, you know, last year where I saw potential for AI and you mentioned it, is with supply chain mapping. I mean, supply chain mapping historically has been very difficult for companies because they didn't have that visibility, because it was such a labor intensive, process. But if you envision, you've got all this data going through a network and you're able to read through POs, sources of origin, destinations,
exactly.
So on and so forth, all throughout the supply chain, you're able to leverage AI and the power of the network to automatically generate a supply chain map. And it might not be 100%, it might not get you there 100%, but hey, maybe it's 80%, and then you have to do some manual thing to get the full 100%. But hey, 80% is better than, starting from zero, trying to do this all manually. So I think that's a real area that I think that I'm hopeful that we'll see some great progress, is companies using, particularly those that leverage a network, using the network data, using the data that's flowing through that, and leveraging an AI to create supply chain mapping.
And once you've got that network connection established, that actually makes it easier for all those network partners. So now you don't have to learn another platform. You don't have to figure out how to connect to it. And then you can potentially also share that data out. When you're thinking of tiers of the supply chain, the tier one has a connection to the tier two, the tier one has a connection to the buyer, but there's, usually no connection between the buyer and the tier two. So when they're sourcing to the tier one, they might not even be aware of who's underneath it. But if you're on a network, it doesn't matter, because if all of the buyers are on that same network, that means that tier two can do one unit of work. They only have to do it one time for all that source that went to that tier one, and the information can flow all the way down to the buyer. That's a lot easier than other systems which aren't networked, where potentially you'd have to go for every buyer who wants to use that system. That supplier might have to go in 10, 20, 100 times. So right. AI is certainly helping too. You kind of hit on a good point, which is you find all of these nodes in the network, and you might need to kind of do, you might get 20% that are actually relevant to your company. So just because, supplier A sent a parcel to supplier B 5 years ago, that doesn't mean it was for your goods, and it doesn't mean that that supplier still does business with them. So that is kind of a good way to use, let's get the big full picture using AI and other, tools to kind of really understand what all the tendrils of your supply chain can be. But then can we work directly with those suppliers to verify we don't do business with these anymore, we do business with these other ones, and make it a little easier for them too to kind of tell you who they use, who they get their supply from.
Great. Well, so Brian, we've covered a lot of ground here. Like I always say in all these episodes is, we could probably spend another hour talking about all the different dimensions of this topic. But maybe as a way to wrap up, for companies that are, let's say, at the low end of the maturity curve when it comes to multi-tier, transparency and traceability, what action should they take to, start moving up that curve? Where should they get started?
Yeah. So if you're starting from zero, it's best, start small. You're not going to be able to trace 100% of your supply chain on day one. Pick the materials that are important to trace, those that are either high value or high risk, and start a program immediately. So start working with your suppliers and really start, like I kind of mentioned before, have them start building that muscle memory. When we get a purchase order, if it's for this material, we know that we have to do these processes to trace it. And then start with some kind of software solution. So from what we've seen, if you're trying to do this with spreadsheets and emails, it just becomes a bit of a mess. It's hard to do. Use a network platform if you can, like you mentioned, Adrian. Try to make it as easy on the suppliers as possible. But it's really, it's all about get started as quickly as you can, and start to do it potentially with a smaller group of suppliers, maybe, your kind of gold tier suppliers who might already have practices in place. If you haven't talked to your suppliers about whether or not they have a traceability program, just ask. A lot of them already have software they're using. They might be able to give you the data that they've already got and import it into another system, or just give you copies of it if you need to. Makes it a lot easier from starting from absolute nothing and starting a process from zero. So,
yeah, great advice. And I think as we talked earlier, if you've been standing on the sidelines on this, time is running out, because there's so many different trends and factors that are going to be, force you basically to start moving in this direction, whether it's regulations or, employees or shareholders, whether it's, again, sustainability, whether it's forced labor, whatever the case might be. There's just so many different factors that are driving the need and importance for this, that it's just a question of time. If you haven't gotten started then you don't want to be scrambling at the 11th hour to put something together, for sure.
And the suppliers are waiting for this. So when we talk to them, they say, you know, we expect in 5 to 10 years that 100% of the goods that we make are going to need to be traced. So they're ready for it. They're some of them are more ready than others, but you know, start having those conversations now if you haven't. And if you're doing it, just continue to basically trace more and more of your supply chain, more and more products until you get as far down as you can.
Great. Well, Brian, with that, again, thank you for, you know, making the time to be with us today. And I want to thank those of you that joined us. If you're watching this episode on demand, either at the Infor Nexus website or on Talking Logistics, and you've got a question or a comment for Brian, you can post it there, and I'm sure he'll be more than happy to respond via that medium. Again, thank you for joining us, and look forward to seeing you in a future episode of Talking Logistics. Have a great day.
Have a great one. Bye.